session number 23138, reel 1.
In June 1914.
Mr. Child, reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Reading in June 1914.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Reading?
Yes, I was at Reading School, yes.
How old were you when you finished there?
19.
And did you have a job when you left?
It was very difficult to find a job because the country had been through the terrific recession of early 1930s. I couldn't manage to get to university. I couldn't get the sort of professional jobs that I was hoping to get, possibly a solicitor or something like that. In the end, I was able but very lucky to get a job with the Midland Bank when there were very few jobs indeed available to anybody. And in the Midland Bank, I went to a small village in Oxfordshire, and I was number 3 in a 3-man branch. I had 6 very happy, impecunious years there, enjoying village life. Travelling every day from home, Reading, to Goring. I became the village scoutmaster because they hadn't got anybody to do the job, and enjoyed that. Indeed, I went eventually to World Jamborees. And one day, the village scoutmaster in the next village, Admiral Collins came to see me and said, "I want you to come to Australia with me as assistant leader of the UK contingent to Sydney for their 150th year celebrations." So I said I couldn't go. I hadn't got any money, and the bank wouldn't let me, and I wasn't really happy about taking on that job. And he said, "Absolute rubbish, you just ignore all those things and come." The bank gave me 6 months leave without pay, but that was all right, and I rustled up for some money and saved what little I had, the thing seemed to be on. But then the war clouds in Europe started to accumulate. And the whole thing was postponed. Early 1939, I think, the Munich Agreement was reached, and the trip to Australia was on again. 1938, sorry. And in 1938, we went to Australia and had the most wonderful time, toured the whole of Australia. We were an official party. And we were looked after everywhere we went, and indeed getting there was marvellous because we went by sea, and the ship stayed at all the interesting places between here and Australia, and we were able to look around, and it was a fantastic trip. Eventually we got back to England and had very good reports. And the bank was quite pleased with me and told me that I could have full pay for the whole time in view of that. And indeed, that helped me to resurrect my finances to a more respectable level. And then we settled down under the cloud of what was happening in Europe. Hitler was at that time threatening to march into Poland, and of course eventually he did, and Chamberlain declared war, and we were then in the deep end at war.
Had you joined the TA before the war?
No, I when I was at school, I was a member of the OTC, and I got something called Certificate A, and that told me that if there was mobilisation, I should be in line for a commission more or less straight away. But in the autumn of 1939, the expeditionary force, of course, went to France, and mobilisation started in England. But I was in a restricted occupation, and nothing seemed to happen.
How had you felt when you heard the news that war had been declared?
Well, like everybody, I was very uncomfortable, because I realised that that life for me and the whole family and all my friends would change, and I never was a particularly brave person. I wasn't particularly happy on any score. But because nothing seemed to be happening officially to me or my friends, everybody wanted to do something. It was the order of the day to do something in the cause. And eventually I went off to Aldershot, and I joined the Royal Artillery there for the King's Shilling as a gunner.
Was this in 39?
This was later in 1939. And I spent three very, very uncomfortable months at Aldershot, most of it on the barrack square, marching up and down. It was a terribly bad winter, a lot of snow and blizzards and whatnot. And we had to parade before dawn, fully dressed every morning, on the barrack square, and do exercises, and then go into the most horrid breakfast, which was quite indigestible. It was a very difficult time, very mixed company I was with, although I had one or two friends with whom I could get on to a wavelength with. On one occasion, I got into trouble talking on pay parade to this friend of mine called George, and he had got a pass to get married, a weekend pass at the coming weekend. But both of us were given detention in the cookhouse, and we spent the weekend peeling potatoes, George had to miss his wedding. And I never enjoyed cooking potatoes again peeling potatoes after that. A terrible weekend, but we got by. Some of us went very sick, and we got lodged in a sort of cottage place near the barracks, we didn't see any doctors or anything like that. It must have been a very bad flu, I guess, I don't know. Food was brought in, and we ate what we could, and left the plate by the side of the bed, and it just stopped there till somebody eventually, with a bit of luck, cleared it away. And after some time, I bribed the orderly to show my temperature lower than it was, I got a week's leave.
You mean you gave him money to do it?
Oh, yes. I got home, at least I think I did from memory, I got home and went home on a bus, and my mother sorted me out, and I got back to barracks a week later in a much better state. But eventually, after a few weeks, some clerk somewhere pulled out a card with my name on it and sent it off, and I was sent to, I think it was called an octu, I trained there to a crash training to get a commission, and I was commissioned as second lieutenant with the 18th Field Regiment, and that was a very fine artillery regiment.
What was your officer's training like?
That was much better and more sensible. So very strict and quite hard, but well organized and quite sensible. But at this time, the expeditionary force was coming home from France via Dunkirk in a difficult state. Everybody was reorganizing. We were put into the Guards, Mobile Guards Brigade for the defense of London and the southeast. While the country was re-equipping and organizing its defenses for the likelihood, the probability of an invasion from Hitler, we dashed around the country, this part of the country, on maneuvers the whole time. We were stationed at Croydon, and we were subjected, like the rest of London and its suburbs, to the huge air raids that the Germans laid on, particularly at that time incendiary bomb air raids, where they set fire to everything they could in London and the south of London.
Can you give some more details about what you experienced of the bombing, please?
Yes, well, as I say, we dashed around, put our guns in all sorts of fashionable places, golf courses and so on, preparation for the possibility of an invasion. And then at nights, when we were in Croydon, very often we were out all night helping the fire brigades, putting out extinguishing fires in private houses and public places. And it was quite an exciting thing to be with a fire brigade and actually to hold hoses and be quite positive about what we were doing. Several times coming back to my billet at night, I would fall down a bomb hole because everything was absolutely pitch dark. You couldn't see where you were going. That wasn't because I'd been drinking or anything like that, but because there were unexpected bomb holes to be found everywhere in the roads and the pavements and so on. One evening I had a drink with a local well-known fellow, and about 3 hours later I was climbing to the top of a house there were some people, and one of them turned out to be this chap that I'd had a drink with, only this time he was wearing a nightcap and a long nightdress. He really looked quite different from the dapper chap I'd talked to in the pub. That sort of thing went on. It was just a very hectic existence.
Did you have any narrow escapes from bombs?
Well, our billet was had incendiary bombs all around it. Everything seemed to be set on fire, and I suppose one just missed out in that respect, that they didn't, the bombs or the incendiaries didn't actually hit me, but
was that a Croydon?
Croydon was very much damaged, yes. And the whole of the south of London, because it must have been a fact that a lot of the German planes turned when they got to England and got to near London and discharged their incendiaries and bombs to get back home, because the air defences of London were pretty good, although they weren't effective enough, of course. But there was that sort of situation all the time. And then,
what did public morale seem to be like in the bombing?
Well, this was marvellous, because everybody became so friendly. Class distinctions, for want of a better word, seemed to disappear, and everybody was called dear or chum or something like that. It was, everybody was very, very friendly. And morale was seemed to be absolutely terrific. I couldn't compare it with the congested areas in the East End and places like that, because Croydon in the south of London isn't that sort of situation. Everything is so much more spread out, and the disasters perhaps were not quite so acute when it came to the personnel living in close together in congested areas. Anyway, the rearmament went on at great speed. The Earl of Beaverbrook was the War Minister at that time, and he arranged for every aluminium utensil available to be collected and turned into aeroplanes. All the iron railings went away from front of houses and eventually turned into guns. It was 100% war effort. Everybody was involved. Everybody did their work as best they could, including travelling to and from London when they could. But in their spare time in the evenings, they were on duty somewhere, fire watching, nursing. Everybody had at least a couple of jobs. And of course, the ladies came to the fore, and they took over a lot of the men's occupations when the men were called up. Children started to disappear from the more central areas. They were sent out to the country and abroad for safety. But morale was amazing, and in amongst all the horrid times, one had little pleasurable times in company of people. It was really quite amazing. Troops were coming in from all over the world to help us, Commonwealth countries, and they were partially trained. In my case, from Newfoundland, two regiments of artillery were raised and came to this country. And they consisted of these tough Newfoundlanders who were mostly fishermen and timberjacks and people like that, really tough guys. They had some very good officers, but not many. Later in the war, they produced some very fine leaders and very fine officers. But they needed a little help in already trained direction. And I was asked to go to the 106 Newfoundland Field Regiment. And I went as a troop commander, a captain, with a troop of four guns and heaps of equipment that went with it. And we went up to Scotland and we trained there hard, played quite hard in between training.
This is with the Newfoundland?
With the Newfoundland Regiment, yes. And that was really hard work, exciting. I found the Newfoundlanders very tough because I was quite a pale-faced bank clerk. Mixing daily with these lumberjacks and people like that was really quite a thing for me. Trying to eat their rations because they cooked the most horrific things and seemed to enjoy eating them, and they were a little bit beyond me, some of them.
What kind of horrific things?
Well, bully beef fried and absolutely covered in fat and grease and so on, and my digestion really wasn't happy with those things. Anyway, that proceeded well, and we flew in aeroplanes and did all sorts of interesting things up there. Flew in Lysanders, which we used to spot for artillery, but they were very dicey things to use because a rifle could easily bring down a Lysander. It was such a slow flyer and had such a big, comparatively big fuselage and wing area. So a lot of interesting things.
Which part of Scotland were they training in?
This was in the east, around Hamilton and Lismahago and places like that. And then we went down to Liverpool when the Allies decided that the big first positive war effort that we should make would be to attack the Germans and the Italians through North Africa and eventually, hopefully, through Italy up into Europe. There was an awful lot of argument about this. The Russians, who had made a pact with Germany at the beginning of the war, which indeed made war inevitable, were not as helpful to the Germans as they would like, and Hitler feared communism more than anything else in the world, and changed his decision to invade Britain, England, attacked Russia. That meant, of course, that we had the Russians straight away as allies, but they really wanted us to tackle Germany by attacking across the Channel at that early stage. We weren't prepared to do that, and the Americans were at that moment a little bit uncertain. They came in because the Japanese around this time had bombed Pearl Harbor, and so America declared war on Japan and Germany. So now we had two major allies, Russia and America, but whereas that was wonderful, it did create an awful lot of problems because all these nations had different objectives, and they did want us to attack across the Channel. Americans weren't sure at that time, at least they went with us, and we decided to attack the south of Europe first. What Churchill called the soft belly of Europe.
So you said you went to Liverpool?
Went to Liverpool and embarked there in a troop ship. A huge number of soldiers on one ship, far too many. Everybody was ill and sick. The only good thing about that voyage was that the ship produced white bread, thing that we hadn't eaten for an awful long time. And but otherwise it was extremely uncomfortable. We went way out into the Atlantic and we avoided the U-boats, which were very much on the prowl in those days, and we landed in Algiers.
Do you know which ship you went in?
No, I can't remember the name of it.
Matter.
No, it's a huge passenger ship. The Americans had landed in the western side of North Africa, and the First Army, who really led the whole attack through Algeria and into Tunis, British Army, First Army, led by General Anderson, came along the north coast. We landed in Algiers, and in the night transshipped into small fast boats, and we went along the coast from Algiers to as far as Beaune, which was halfway between Algiers and Tunis.
Was your landing unopposed?
In Algiers, yes. But on the way between Algiers and Beaune, in these fast boats, we were attacked by U-boats, and one of our...
Mr. Child, Reel 2, can you tell me about this attack?
Yes, it as a result, we lost most of our lovely new equipment, all the lovely new guns that we'd brought from England and so on. And we landed helter-skelter in Beaune in some disorganization. And they made my battery. I was...
Could you give me more details about that attack, what, as you remember it?
Well, I don't remember much about it, except that, you know, there was a lot of noise and disorganization, and we managed to get into Beaune Harbour, my fast boat, and got on to land and got what was left of the equipment ashore, and they put enough equipment together to furnish my battery, a battery being two troops of field guns. I was one troop commander and a friend was another, and we had a battery commander, Major Howard, who was a great guy, but he'd got himself unpopular with the bigwigs because he was originally a brigadier, and he was demoted to major and commanded our battery.
Which unit were you in?
This was the 106th Newfoundland Field Regiment.